Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have on Jeremy Slate. He is the founder of Create Your Own Life podcast. Guys, I think you're going to really love this podcast because this is a story about inspiration, perspiration, sticking with it, and believing in yourself. Jeremy was somebody who, much like myself, started off in academia. He was trying to get a degree in religion. He studied literature at Oxford. He just didn't want to continue on that path. He went on to teach in college, but he had a personal life crisis in his family. His mom had a stroke, and he had to help his parents pay the bills. He jumped into a bunch of stuff he hated doing to just make it all happen, but instead of giving up, he dove back into what kind of life he really wanted. He took a risk. He put himself back out there, tried a bunch of different things until he found the podcast that he loves, a job that he really wants to wake up and do every day, and that he's found a lot of success in. I hope you liked today's episode. I think it's really inspirational for anybody out there that really wants to make a change or is worried about staying the path. This is a story with somebody who really made it come together. I love chatting with Jeremy, and I know you will love hearing what he has to say. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, I hope you enjoy today's show. Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have Jeremy Slate on. Hey, Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
Hi, how you doing today?
Fantastic. I'm so excited. Jeremy just had me on his podcast, Create Your Own Life, and we're flipping it over, and he's coming on The Art of Authenticity, so this is a lot of fun.
It's always a lot of fun when you get to do that flip around, Laura. I've done it on a few shows, and it's a ton of fun.
It is, because it's like we get to have a sort of an extended conversation, right?
Right.
And we were chatting before we went live, and I didn't realize this, but our backgrounds, we started off so similarly. So I thought, Jeremy, to kick off the show, maybe you could take us back a little bit. I was a philosophy undergrad, graduate student, and then really muddled around a lot to figure out what I wanted in my life. And it sounds like we had very similar starts.
I have this conversation with people a lot. It's like I look at my education background. I say to people, what parent in their right mind would say these are great majors to go to school for if you want to get a job? But it was fun. You know, what are you going to do?
I know. I got it. Like philosophy, like people would constantly say to me, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with that? I'm like, I don't know.
Well, my background actually in world religions for undergrad, and I had a minor in philosophy and also Latin. I'm proficient in speaking and reading Latin, crazy enough, though I have really no one to talk to. So I did a world religion degree in undergrad just because religion and, you know, man's search for meaning and their soul and everything else always was very, very interesting to me, you know, no matter what angle you come at it from. So from there, then I got a chance through a scholarship program through Seton Hall to study literature at Oxford. So I studied British literature, mainly Catholic historical literature, which was kind of interesting. And then from there, I ended up going to grad school because it was kind of like I had been a student for so long at this point. I didn't really know what else I would do besides go to school. So I decided I was going to go to school and I was going to be a college professor. And, you know, that was kind of it. Life was decided at 20. So from there, I went to grad school. I got a degree. I always had a very huge interest in Alexander the Great. So I took a lot of classes that had to do with Alexander and Greek religion and things like that. So I actually studied ancient Greek and Roman religion and propaganda, because during that time period, a lot of them were very close to the same. You know, the emperor made up rules or whatever just to for religion, just to control people, which was really interesting. And then once I got out, I had applied to a few PhD programs, didn't get into any of them. So that was kind of the end of that. I didn't really know what else I was going to do at that point. So I went into, I've always been a pretty fit guy. I've been a competitive powerlifter for years. So I went into personal training and I did that for about a year before I finally ended up running into a priest that I know, because I went to Catholic school the whole way through.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, the school I'm working at is looking for a history teacher. We'd love to have you in there. So I got started in this private school, and you don't need a teaching degree to teach in private school. So, you know, it's kind of like they just throw you into the fire and see what happens. It's like, here's 40 kids. You've never been in the room with one before. Good luck.
What grade?
Sophomores. So I don't know if you've ever had experience with sophomores, but you know, freshmen are kind of meek. Seniors are very studious and ready for college, and sophomores are the biggest pain in the butt. They're crazy. They're insane.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's kind of the year that they're more comfortable with themselves, so they try to get away with everything.
Uh-huh.
And they've kind of calmed down by junior year because they have to get into college. But
how funny. I never thought about that. I'm like reflecting back to my sophomore year. I'm like, maybe that was my rebellious year.
So it was really interesting because I was somebody that I was kind of an entrepreneur in school. You know, I volunteered for everything. You know, I was the chairperson to speak to the diocese, all these different things, but I was miserable. I came home every night, you know, just basically wanting to hit my head against the wall because, you know, all while I had been working, I got engaged in 2013 and then my mom had a stroke. So I was getting up at 4:45 in the morning, getting her dressed and then going to work. And, you know, coming home, working and going to bed at like midnight or 1 o'clock. So I wasn't sleeping very much. I wasn't, you know, very happy with how things were going.
Mm-hmm.
And then my wife was approached by a family friend about a network marketing opportunity. And I was looking for a change. And it was kind of the thing that worked for me. And I did that for a few years pretty successfully. But it also wore me out because dealing with people's, you know, personal lives rather than just their business lives can be a lot to handle. You know what I mean? And that was the biggest tiring thing to me. So I've kind of been continually looking for something else.
And when you say you were doing network marketing, what specifically were you doing?
Well, I don't want to talk too much about the individual company, but we were selling a health-based product and I was really good at, you know, selling pretty much anything. And I was really good at recruiting people, but team management was very difficult for me. So because of that, I could build some, you know, very good income, but I couldn't sustain it because it was difficult for me to control, you know, this person's not showing up to meetings because they're getting a divorce and they're having this problem, they're having that problem. And I don't know about yourself, but I'm not always the most, I guess, apathetic person. I'm always like kind of just get over it and move on. And you can't say that to people. It doesn't always work.
And how old were you at this point?
I was 25 at this point, 25, 26.
Well, too, that's a lot of responsibility to manage at a young age. And I did a ton of management in my business and it is very, very, very taxing. And it just requires a lot of emotional energy, right? If you're not organized towards it, and at 25, like I don't know how many people there were, but I can imagine that it was also pretty draining and you're coming out of a situation that you weren't that happy in. So all in, right? It starts to get depleting.
It kind of led me to, you know, I was doing this while I was still personal training at the same time. I had, you know, started my own fitness company. And it's tough to run something like that when you're the only person because you kind of have this hesitation on getting more clients until you need them, but it's already too late by that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up going last May, I ended up going away to Peru for a month. And I did a lot of, it was for the Rotary Club. We did a service trip and I did a lot of soul searching while I was there. And kind of realized that this really wasn't how I wanted to spend the rest of my life. And I happened to come back and get a call from a really good friend that was looking to expand her marketing company into social media and digital branding and things like that. And I was like, wow, that's actually exactly what I'm able to do. You know, crazy enough from all the background I told you, but that's actually something I'm really good at. So I've been doing that since last May. And at the same time, I had started the Create Your Own Life podcast, which has probably been the most successful thing that I've ever done because I've put everything I have into it at this point.
And so are you doing the social media work at the same time as the podcast?
I work part-time there. I maybe get around 20 hours a week, but that's, you know, really all I need to be able to put all the time and work I put into my podcast. I wouldn't be able to produce as much content, do as much work on it as I would. You know, I'm publishing 5 days a week. That's a lot of work, you know?
Yeah, I can't even comprehend that. That's twice a week is my limit. But when you say you decide, you found the podcast, you put your heart into it because you're trying to find your way, philosophy, you're interested in what it means to be a human and all that stuff, but you don't know where to put it. And now you found this podcast, Create Your Own Life, which is really philosophy in, you know, more modern terms.
Right.
But what was the decision to follow up with that? And how did you create the success there? And how come that's been more meaningful? What was that process for you?
Well, it kind of, you have to back that up just a little bit to kind of understand the whole thing. Well, first of all, I've always been somebody that's loved podcasts. I've listened to, you know, Lewis Howes and Tim Ferriss, and those are a couple of my favorite shows. And I've always thought, you know, I can do this, but I never got around to doing it. And then I mentioned that trip in May of last year. When I got back, I started a podcast and it was called Rock Your Life. And it was horrible. I had 100 downloads and that was it. And I quit very quickly.
Okay.
I quit very quickly. And it was in September of last year that I ended up getting married. And I was like, all right, you know, it's time to put your big boy pants on and like actually do something for yourself. Because what you're doing to pay the bills right now is great. But, you know, how are you ever going to make something bigger? Because I've always been a big thinker. And I came up with the idea of create your own life. But then I actually went and bought a course on how to do it. And so I actually learned a lot of the stuff that I didn't know earlier. I learned what numbers look like to be successful. So I sat down and made a spreadsheet of the 100 people I would most want to interview. And then I sat down for about 8.5 hours and sent individual emails to each one of those people that I I basically wrote to them. It wasn't, you know, this whole scripted email. It was written to them.
How did that work out?
I had about 70 out of 100 get back to me.
Wow.
And 2/3 of those said yes.
No way.
And I was interviewing from that list up until last month. And then now it's kind of been, you know, referrals and everything else.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And did you know right away that this was working for you?
In terms of the list for getting people or which portion?
As you started recording the podcast, were you like, wow, this is... I've really found my sweet spot. I love this. This is what I, you know.
I've always enjoyed, like, you know, like I said, studying things. So for me, studying people was very, very interesting. And I've always been somebody that enjoys communicating. I was always the kid in school that couldn't get to shut up and, you know, got kicked out of kindergarten for singing country songs. So I've always been that personality that enjoyed talking to people. So, yeah. So in this sense, I feel like I found something that not only, you know, number one, helps me to build a network, two, helps me to build a business, but also allows me to go to school myself on a daily basis and learn from very successful people. And the interesting thing is when you just send somebody an email and say you want their advice or you want to talk to them, you're either going to get a no or hear nothing. When you tell someone you want to interview them, they're really excited for free promo.
I know. It's amazing. I had the same experience with my podcast. I sent out a list and I thought, well, I don't know, but almost everybody got back. It's an easier thing to get going than you'd think. So you've interviewed all these people on your show about how to create a life that you love. What's the advice that you're hearing that's most consistent from these different, you know, guests who are, you know, in different areas of the world?
You know, it seems to be the one of the big I have a couple questions that when I get into my rapid fire questions I really like to ask people. And, you know, one of them is, you know, what is the most fulfilling thing for you? Another is, you know, the meaning of success. You know, I basically say that, you know, Webster's dictionary has called you and you get to redefine success. What does it mean to you? And the interesting thing is, you know, we're at 105 episodes now, and probably 95% of those have said that success for me is getting successful so that I can help other people, which is a really, really interesting viewpoint. Because I always point out, whenever you're on an airplane and they tell you about putting the mask on yourself for oxygen, they say, put it on yourself, then your children, which it makes sense because you're no good to your kids if you're passed out and dead. And it's the same thing in business. If you want to see other people do well, you have to help yourself do well first. Because then you have a heck of a lot of ability and a bigger reach in order to help other people, you know, see success. And I just think that's really cool that a lot of people have said very, very similar things that, you know, their meaning in success is getting successful first so that you can help other people.
And how do they think about fulfillment? What has been the big response there? Has it been also very similar?
That's the interesting one, is it hasn't really been as similar, because it's interesting because I do interview people that sometimes are promoting a new thing they're putting out. And if they're promoting something that's coming out, the thing that's most fulfilling for them is the thing they're putting out right now. So so it depends, you know what I mean? And sometimes you get some very heartfelt answers, but it really depends on the person.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, if they love what they do, then the thing they're doing right now would be really fulfilling to them. Right.
Right.
I mean, that would make a lot of sense. Any biggest mistakes you've heard them talk about in creating your own life? Like anything they've said unilaterally, don't do this if you're trying to figure it out?
Yeah, I can't think of anything that there's been a unilateral mistake. But for a lot of people, I know you and I had talked about this earlier, it's been not knowing the people that are around them. I hear this time and time again that we don't realize that the people we surround ourselves with R, you know, really a big deal. Jim Rohn talks about the five people that you surround yourself with. You're the average of the five. So it's really important to pay attention to that. And it's a big takeaway I've had from my guests, that they haven't really always watched, you know, the people that they've had around them, and they've had to learn that the hard way.
I'm such a big believer in that strategy. I mean, I know the five, it's the average kind of thing. I don't know. I wonder about that calculation exactly, but I don't quite get that sometimes, but I definitely think like the people you take your advice from, the people who you go to and seek counsel when you're really thinking about the things you're doing, I mean, think about the position you're putting yourself in, that, you know, that their opinions really matter. And if you're surrounded by people that are organized in one direction and they have a worldview in a certain way and you're listening to that, it's playing a role in your life. Or if you've surrounded yourself with the wrong types of people and you don't have people to go to, that can also be a challenge.
Totally.
And so what does it mean when you're living someone else's dream? I saw that was a big point of your podcast, and I'm such a believer in finding out what your own dream is and stop living like somebody else's dream. But how do you interpret that idea?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like I never really quite knew what I wanted to do. So, you know, my parents both wanted to be teachers. Neither of them went to college. So I guess I was didn't know what else I was going to do. So it sounded like a great idea. And I don't know about the way we get educated at this point in time. I just don't know if it's 100% correct. And that's coming from somebody that has, you know, a big background in education. I don't know if at 18 years old, I was prepared to make the choice of what do I want to do the rest of my life. So that's why I just don't know if maybe there should be some other, you know, period of discernment, or maybe a couple of years where you work in some trades or something like that before you decide where that education is going to take you. Because I think education is definitely extremely valuable. But I think a lot of times we're making a choice of what do we want to do for the rest of our lives at an age where we're not even an adult yet. You know what I mean? So how do we even know what we want to do for the rest of our lives? And, you know, not to mention all the debt that we're saddled with for something we may never end up doing, you know?
Absolutely. I think today more than ever, that question's being asked because of how much schools are costing. You know, an individual is leaving with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And like you said, it's not even clear you want to do it. And I've always thought, why isn't there a class to help guide your decision process on which classes you're choosing for education?
Right.
There's nothing helping you figure out your passions. So you've been studying this idea of finding passion. How does somebody start that process? Do you have a certain recommendation for how to find passion?
Well, I don't know if a large percentage of the audience is going to like what I have to say about that, because I don't know that following your passion is really the way to go, because I may be passionate about dog collars, but it doesn't mean I can create something around that, you know? And I think sometimes that can be a little bit of a cop-out for people that have an excuse of why they're not doing anything right now. Well, I'm not passionate about anything. Well, that's like, that's great. I tend to agree with an author named Cal Newport, and he wrote a book called Be So Good They Can't Ignore You. And in the book, Cal talks about, you know, finding your skills, things that you're really good at, and then becoming the best at those skills. And once you're able to do that and do something with those skills, he says passion will follow. But he says find what you're good at first. Find something that you can, you know, become better at that is actually viable, and then become passionate about that. I think looking for the passion to be there first can sometimes lead you in the wrong direction. You know, I don't know that I'd recommend any kid to get a degree in religion or history unless that's something they wanted to teach. But, you know, that was what I was passionate about. I followed my passion and it took me in the wrong direction.
Right, right. I mean, it's interesting because your passion in philosophy and all that stuff, and now you're talking to people about how to create a life. I mean, it's still generally in the same spot, but how you want to use it and how you want to bring it out into the world, it's a tricky thing. And I agree with this idea of passion being about skill set, right? Like the things that you're most organized around doing, you know, life is leaving you a big clue. If that's what you keep coming back to, if that's something that you enjoy doing, cultivate that and then think about where you can best use that in the world.
Absolutely.
Right? So what then does it mean to you to have an authentic life?
Wow. That is a deep question. I think that's really, and it's kind of interesting because it goes back to the idea of people. I think a lot of times we have this idea that we have to show people this certain face of us because we have this idea of what's publicly acceptable. And for a lot of years, that drove me in the wrong direction, you know, and until I kind of realized what I needed to be living by, basically that I needed to not live to make other people happy, you know, that was when I was truly able to live an authentic life. Because I think a lot of times we're living lives because we want to make other people happy. And then we, you know, I haven't gotten there yet, but we hit 50, 60 years old and then we're miserable because we've lived our whole life, you know, just to please other people. And then we realize there's nothing there for us.
Yeah, right. Or check off boxes because we've been told that's the way to do it.
Serious. It's almost a disease in some ways. You know, we have to go. You're better off going through life seeking not to be liked or admired, because then you can actually do what you want to do. And that's not to say, you know, you walk around insulting everybody, but it's basically saying, you know, do what you want to do, you know, as long as, you know, it's in the interest of other people. But do it because you want to, not because somebody else believes you have to, or because you're doing it because of someone else, because then you end up living a life you don't want to live.
Right. But what do you do when the people closest to you disagree and say that's selfish and who do you think you are?
Right. The problem with that is them saying that a lot of times can be selfish because this is something I talk about a lot, is one of the most dangerous statements that somebody can make is, I'm only saying this because I care. You know, oh, you shouldn't go pursue that because blah, blah, blah is going to happen to you. I'm only saying it because I care. You know, if you take that away, or if you look at communications for how they really are and how they make you feel, then you're going to get the actual intention. And though people say they want the best for us, they don't always. And it might be their own fear that's preventing you from flying.
That's right. Well, that's, I think, again, people are not necessarily ill-intended.
Right.
But it's their projection of their own fears and how they would see their own life and their own concerns about, you know, you. And I think, what do you think, Jeremy, but the idea that if maybe you go a different path from those closest to you, they will lose you.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, because you have to really put the, as long as these are people that should be in your lives, put the attention on, you know, keeping in touch. But I don't know that that's necessarily true, that they will lose you, because if you're miserable, then what's the point?
I meant that their fear is that they're going to lose you. So that sometimes they try to hold you down a little bit so that, you know, because they have right. their own fear that if you step out and you're big and you're huge, then, you know, you won't stay connected to them.
You know, the funny part about that is I think a lot of times we're just not overt enough with our communication, because yeah. I guarantee if you said to somebody, well, what would happen if I did that? You'd probably get exactly what they're thinking. And if you can get them to the point where they say, wow, that probably wouldn't happen. You know, I played drums for years. You know, I've been a drummer. I play bass guitar. And when I originally wanted to start playing drums, my mom's like, you can't play drums. You're going to get it in a band and get addicted to drugs. I'm like, how does that make any sense, Mom? I'm like, what is going to happen if I play the drums? Is that going to happen? And she was like, well, no. I was always this kid that questioned way too much. I find if you're more overt in your communication, you're actually going to handle a lot of those things that are there, because I think the thing people don't get in their communication is you're responsible for both sides of the communication. You know what I mean? You're responsible for, you know, getting somebody to acknowledge what you're saying, as well as delivering what you're saying. And I think too many times we're talking at people instead of, you know, basically talking into people and, you know, being responsible for both sides of the communication.
Absolutely. But I think vulnerability plays such a big role, right? Why do you think people won't communicate their truths? What do you think that's about?
I think it's the same thing of they just don't want to either hurt somebody's feelings or hurt their image of them. And I think too many of us live our lives that way. And I think that's a really, really big problem. Because if I didn't say, you know, some certain things to my parents because I was afraid of what they'd think, you know, that's going to create something there, whether they see it or I see it. You know what I mean? It's going to create a difference in how we react to each other. So it's better off to just bring it out in the open and talk about it rather than just kind of holding on to it. Because the thing you'll find out is people find out a lot more about what's going on, even if you don't communicate it. So it's kind of weird when it's like this unspoken thing that both sides know, but nobody's discussed it. So I just find being overt in communication is huge.
It's huge. It's huge. And the truth is if I think the deepest fear is you'll lose the love of the person in your life, because unfortunately some of our loved ones will hold that over our heads to control our decisions. And you know, if that's what somebody's doing in your life, that's not good for you anyways. So it's better to find out that, you know, that person is keeping you there with a slight manipulation tactics.
Seriously.
Yeah. So either way, I think you're better off. So when you're in a stressful situation, you know, you've made all these changes to find what you love to do, and, you know, it takes a certain amount of courage to do that.
Right.
How do you make decisions that feel authentic to you when, you know, there's the fear of paying the bills, there's the fear of, right, like other people's approvals, all these different things? What's your process to do that?
For me, it's finding a mentor. It's finding someone else I can talk to that's exterior to my situation, because I'm always going to be in my situation. I need to talk to somebody that's outside of it, because it can be very difficult to pull yourself out of it. You need somebody else that kind of, you know, number one, has a little bit of life experience, but also has a viewpoint into what's going on and can kind of see situations for what they really are. Because I think sometimes we want to see situations differently than they really are. So for me, you know, it's been finding somebody that can, you know, basically be that terminal that I can talk to, that person, you know.
How did you find a mentor?
It's kind of interesting because it just kind of happened. I started a podcast at the same time I'd been, you know, working at this marketing company that I worked for. And my boss at that company has actually had a huge amount of admiration for what I've been doing. And she's actually become that person that has mentored me, because she's been very successful at her business. So I've been able to take a lot of that and, you know, not only in my personal life, but also, you know, put that into how I've been running my show and things like that.
That's fantastic. And so now that you're in a place that you've found this work that you're loving and it's going well, do you have daily practices, things that you do to keep an authentic life? Like you mentioned on your site, Passion Without Fluff, it's very actionable. Like what kinds of things do you recommend for people?
It's like kind of like we talked about before. I'm just somebody that I still hold true to what I, you know, I'm at 29 now, but I still hold true to that 24, 25-year-old kid that it was like, I don't buy into things just because there's emotion attached to it. I try to look at things for what they are. And because of that, you're able to make a lot better decisions. So I find that that's one of the biggest things that's able to, you know, really properly guide me in life, is being able to look at things for what they are without emotion attached. Because I think sometimes, though, it's important to consider the emotions and the ramifications of things. I think sometimes we can make the wrong decisions because we are too worried about how it feels right now.
Mm-hmm. That's a great one. Well, Jeremy, if people are looking for more information on your podcast or more information about you, where can they find you?
The best place to find me is over at jeremyryanslate.com. And it's just everything's linked up there. Social media, they can subscribe on any major platforms there. So that's going to be the best place.
And if they're checking out Create Your Own Life, what kinds of things can they expect on the podcast?
It's really interesting because I started the show as, you know, this is going to be just a business show, but kind of realized that people can create their life in so many different ways. And, you know, I've interviewed business people, I've interviewed artists, I've interviewed actors. I had one of the stars of the TV show Heroes on. But it's funny because the most impactful episode for me was actually when I interviewed a former NFL player, Steve Weatherford, and he talked about how he was able to balance his family and football. And like, it was just incredible the amount of attention this guy put on spending time with his family. So it's kind of a wide kaleidoscope of different things that we cover, because there's so many ways that you can create your life.
Absolutely. And that's the whole point, right?
Sure.
Don't live someone else's dream, create your life. And how do you get out of that cycle of looking into your neighbor's backyard and thinking that might be for you, right? Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it.